Welcome to the Functional Medicine Podcast with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay. We're coming to you from McMinn Clinic in Birmingham, Alabama, where Dr. McMinn is an integrative and functional MD, and Lindsay Matthews is a registered nurse and IIN certified health coach. In this podcast, we'll be discussing the latest information on a wide range of topics in the field of functional medicine, which looks for the root cause of disease, and integrative medicine, which incorporates both conventional and alternative therapies. Our overall goal is to help you be the best that you can be in mind, body, and spirit. The following discussion is for educational purposes only and is not intended to diagnose or treat any disease. Please do not apply any of this information without approval from your personal doctor. And now, on to the show with Dr. McMinn and Coach Lindsay.
Welcome back to the Functional Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jim McMinn, and we're honored to have you with us today. I'm here with my co-host, health coach, and BFF, the one and only Nurse Lindsay Matthews.
Thank you, Dr. McMinn. Hello, everyone. We're excited to be back with you today, and we have another wonderful topic for you today, very important. We're going to take a deep dive into breast cancer prevention. However, before we get going, I'd like to ask you a favor. Please head on over to iTunes and leave us a review and comments. These are really important for us to get the word out and grow our show. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. Those numbers really help us. So thank you so much in advance. We really appreciate it.
Yes, Coach, I've really been looking forward to doing this podcast. I think that women are falsely led to believe that you either get breast cancer or you don't. It's just kind of bad karma. Yeah. And there's not really much you can do about it. But the science tells us otherwise. And as you know, Coach, I'm a fan of science. The reality is that there are many things a woman can do to significantly decrease her risk of breast cancer. And what we're going to do today is to empower women with evidence-based information in order to live a long, healthy life free of breast cancer. And let me say something else, Coach. Sometimes I ask women, I say, have you ever, and these are women like in their 50s and 60s, have you ever had a conversation with your doctor or your healthcare provider about breast cancer prevention? And the answer is always no. And that's really frustrating to me because I think, once again, there's so much we can do. And unfortunately, there's this emphasis on mammograms, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and I'm fine with that, although I do think there's what I call a mammogram industrial complex. I think that we are really doing a disservice to women by also not talking about prevention.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think, we all have an awareness. You know, we see the fast food cups, ironically enough, that have the pink ribbon on them.
Yes.
And I have to wonder how, buying fast food helps my breast cancer risk. But, we are aware, and there is a lot of fear. Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
And instead of just moving beyond that to actual actionable prevention, we are just in that place of fear and anxiety and awareness. And so I'm really excited, with October coming up, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, let's take this to the next level. Let's do some breast cancer prevention action.
Perfect timing.
And just kind of talk about that empowerment that you're talking about. So just to set the stage on some background with breast cancer, statistics-wise, breast cancer is one of the leading causes of morbidity and mortality in women. 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer in her lifetime. And according to cancer.org, only 5 to 10% of those cases are thought to actually be hereditary.
Isn't that interesting, Lindsay? According to a comprehensive guide to breast cancer, the majority of women who develop breast cancer have no family history of this disease. That means that 90% of cancers are not due to genes, but in fact are due instead to the way we live our lives. Mm-hmm. Things like smoking, diet, stress, sleep, alcohol, hormones, radiation, and toxins all have an effect on a woman's risk of getting breast cancer. We can't change our genes, but we can change what we call genetic expression by changing the way we live our lives. And that's called lifestyle medicine, which, Coach, I think is the most powerful medicine on earth. It's called lifestyle medicine. For instance, two identical twins may have the same genetic risk of breast cancer, but one woman gets it and the other doesn't. It's all about managing your risk.
Yes. And I think, a lot of what we're talking about here is epigenetics.
Correct.
So we can accept, what our genes are, and we we can't change that to a degree, but we can change the expression. So focus on what we can change, and thereby we can significantly reduce our risk of breast cancer. So we are not helpless victims. My female friends out there, become that empowered patient with this evidence-based information that we're going to present to you.
There we go. Now, where do we almost always start, Lindsay?
We got to go back to what's going in.
That's
that
right.
Diet.
Right, garbage in, garbage out, or right. You know, feed yourself good stuff. So we're going to start with diet, which is where we often start with stuff. And so many studies have shown a link between diet and breast cancer. It's interesting, though, Lindsay, if you ask the average doctor, even the average oncologist, does diet have anything to do with the answer, they'll say no. But I think the science tells us otherwise. So let's talk about that. For instance, a report in NIH, that's a National Institute of Health, reports that the risk of breast cancer almost doubles in women who have high levels of trans fats in their blood. Where do trans fats come from? Things like baked goods, frozen pizza, microwave popcorn. I had a lady just yesterday, Lindsay, she said she has popcorn every day. She said, well, that sounds healthy. Well, I said, no, wait a minute. What about those trans fats? Because, you know, she had a lot of cardiovascular risk factors. Mm-hmm. Trans fats not only affect things like breast cancer, but big time affect things like cardiovascular risk.
Right.
Other things would be fried foods, including french fries, non-dairy creamer, refrigerated dough such as biscuits and rolls, and stick margarine.
You know, it's just hard to beat that whole foods diet.
It is.
Plant-centered, anti-inflammatory, and that just really helps with cancer prevention.
And if you we did go back and do a podcast on nutrition. If you go back and listen to that, we talk about whole foods diet. So take a listen to that.
And, you know, an example of that whole foods diet that we love is the good Mediterranean diet. And, of course, just getting some of those deep water fish in your diet, those carotenoids, which are, of course, found in your red and yellow fruits and vegetables. The indole 3 carbinols, we're going to talk about that as a supplement specifically, but those indole 3 carbinols come from cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower. So getting those in your diet is important. Of course, curcumin, which we've talked about before, olive oil and garlic could also be helpful here. And we always would love for you to consider going organic and avoiding cooking your foods in plastics or eating foods out of plastics, which contain those endocrine disrupting chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially organic for those what we call dirty dozen foods.
Absolutely.
Which one's good? If you just go online, look up dirty dozen foods, you'll easily find those. A study published in the British Journal of Cancer states that, quote, our data indicate a strong protective effect against breast cancer development with intake of foods rich in fiber, end quote. Another study from the journal Cancer, a major medical journal, states that high fiber consumption appears to be associated with reduced risk for breast cancer. So, I think it does really matter, Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, diet, so important. Mm-hmm. Another study that we can cite here is one entitled Vitamin E and Breast Cancer Prevention, Current Status and Future Potential. And they concluded, this is kind of a quote here, recent reviews of epidemiological data suggest that dietary source of vitamin E may provide some protection against breast cancer, while vitamin E supplements do not. So kind of understanding that just getting it in your diet is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Where can we get vitamin E in our diet? Avocados, nuts, seeds, and wheat germ.
Yeah, interesting. The studies also indicate that caffeine consumption reduces the relative risk of various cancers. A meta-analysis found an inverse association with coffee and caffeine production with breast cancer in postmenopausal women. So in other words, coffee drinkers had less breast cancer.
Wow.
Interesting.
Not necessarily what you might expect there.
So have your morning joe.
Yeah. And then another article from Science Daily stated, we found that among Puerto Rican women that the combined intake of onion and garlic was associated with reduced risk of breast cancer.
Another study I ran across stated that, quote, increased daily consumption of about 3.4 ounces of soda, that's about roughly about the third of a can of Coke, was associated with an 18% greater risk of some cancers. Meanwhile, the likelihood of breast tumors alone rose more than 22%.
With a third of a can of Coke.
Correct. Correct.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
A study by Bacalar looked at 40,000 women and concluded that eating red meat is associated with an increased risk for breast cancer while eating white meat with a reduced one.
Mm-hmm. And if you kind of break down the different kinds of fats, we see that animal fat from beef and pork stimulates breast cancer. Omega-6 fats also stimulate breast cancer. Dairy fat had no effect, whereas the omega-9 fats from olive oil inhibits breast cancer, and the omega-3 fats, which we find once again in the fatty fish, and also from flax, also inhibits breast cancer. So all fats are not the same, Lindsay. You have those good fats and bad fats, and you have the, what we call pro-inflammatory fats and anti-inflammatory fats. So you really want to focus on those anti-inflammatory fats, once again, fatty fish, flax, olive oil, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Fat doesn't make you fat. Mm-hmm. It can be protective.
There we go.
And those threes and nines are those omegas that mm-hmm. are really generally, rule of thumb, very good for us. So in summary, the diet that women should be eating for optimal health and breast cancer risk reduction is one that's high in fiber, low in sugar, of course, red meat, trans fats, and processed foods. Drink coffee, but avoid those sodas and alcohol.
Now, Lindsay, let's move on to exercise. A study from the journal Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise concluded that, with regard to breast cancer, there's a reasonably clear evidence that physical active women have about 20 to 30% reduction in risk compared to inactive women. Also appears that there is a likely a dose-response relation. That's huge, Lindsay. If you think about it, that's cutting your risk in about a third just mm-hmm. by getting regular exercise. Well, right. That's huge, yeah. And so yeah. there we go, back to that concept of being empowered and women thinking it's just bad karma. No, it's not. It's how you live your life.
Yes. And, you know, we're throwing out these numbers here, but then we've got to also think what synergistically could happen, you know, if we combine right. the diet plus the exercise. We've got to be adding right. those percentages and greatly reducing that risk.
It's iterative. That's right.
So according to an article from Harvard's Women's Health Watch published by Harvard Medical, and just going to quote, they were quoting an article here from the journal Cancer, 10 to 19 hours a week of about 2 hours a day of exercise had the greatest benefit. Women who worked out that much had breast cancer risks that were lower than 30% of that of inactive women. So the intensity of the workout didn't really seem to matter in this study. So, and age also didn't seem to matter. It was just that amount of physical activity mm-hmm. that reduced the breast cancer risk in women, both mm-hmm. during their reproductive years and after menopause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think we can argue, you know, not just for those like 30-minute workouts, but for an active lifestyle,
right.
kind of that
Correct.
Blue zone idea.
Exactly. And if you haven't read the Blue Zone book, it's really a wonderful book. Lindsay and I both love it. Basically, they go around the world and look at these little pockets of people where they live to 100 and they're out chopping wood and carrying water,
yes.
being active, and they're sharp, and looking at, so what are they doing? And certainly, the diet and the exercise are a huge part of that,
right.
and the active lifestyle. They walk everywhere. They don't
yes,
drive everywhere, for
right.
instance. So, yeah, I think you're right. You know, back to the comment about 2 hours a day, I think most of us don't really have the time to do 2 hours
exactly.
a day.
But in the gym anyway.
Right. But if you can, you know, do your 30 minutes 5 days a week of whatever you do, hit or whatever, and then add to that just an active lifestyle, then that could be really helpful.
I know you love to walk to work, for
yeah,
example.
Yeah, sure do. Mm-hmm. And the next step is sleep. It's hard to overstate the importance of a good night's sleep for so many reasons, including breast health. The results of several studies suggest that women who work at night, for instance, the factory workers, doctors, nurses, police officers, and bless all those people who stay up at night, Lindsay, to help
yes.
us out. I mean, all
Thank
those
you.
Wonderful because public service.
Because I found out I yeah. could not do that.
Yeah. I did it for 20 years, and oh my gosh, when you're sick and you go to the ER in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. and some doctor or nurse is there or the ambulance driver,
yeah, you're so thankful.
So grateful for all those people.
Yes.
However, it takes a toll on those people in many ways, including a higher risk of breast cancer, compared to women who work during the day. Interestingly, other research suggests that women who live in areas with high levels of external nightlight, such as streetlights, for example, have a higher risk of breast cancer.
Hmm.
Interesting.
That deep sleep is so
Correct.
Restorative and important
right.
for our bodies.
Right, and be sure to get your bedroom really dark.
So, you know, just a word of encouragement for the night shift people that are out there. If you are a night shift worker, thank you. And,
yeah.
You know, if that is your case, just know that it's a risk factor. And so how can we mitigate other things? You know, how can we bring that risk down?
Control what you can.
Areas?
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's talk about supplementation. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to open up with the biggest strongest player in the room, the MVP, vitamin D.
It affects everything, doesn't it?
It does.
Everything.
It does. I mean, yeah. I really feel, you know, thinking about this podcast, I was thinking, you know, what are some of the big takeaways? And to me, vitamin D is one of those for me personally.
Sure.
I don't know how you feel about that.
It's huge.
I just think, you know, nothing else that's just such a good one to be on. Most of us are deficient, you know, and it's one that really most all practitioners, even mainstream medical, is going to be willing to test for you.
Well, here's another thing, Lindsay, is really important about that. If you look at sort of the reference range on the labs, it's, you know, 30 to 100, so you could be 30 or 31, your doctor says you're normal, but that's not optimal. The reference ranges just basically are what we call a 95% confidence interval. It means that if they get that lab, the vitamin D lab, on 100 people, 95% would fall between 30 and 100. But, you know, so many people are deficient, and the deficient people are in that data set. So I think that when it comes to optimization for whether it be breast cancer or heart disease, or mortality, or dementia, or immune system, whatever. Then absolutely, you want at least 50 on your blood lab. So don't let your doctor tell you you're normal if your labs are 31.
Yeah. Great.
And you got to check labs. I mean, it starts with, you know, you don't know what you are until you measure it, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of put some information behind why we think vitamin D is important with breast cancer particularly, there was a study from Harvard Women's Health Watch where there were 17,000 women, and these California scientists found that the risk of breast cancer fell steadily with increasing blood levels of vitamin D. The highest levels, more than 52 nanograms per milliliter, correlated with 50% reduction risk of breast cancer.
That's huge.
I mean, shut the front door.
I know. So let's just take exercise 30%, vitamin D 50%. Now you're up to 80% risk reduction.
Right.
Not even mentioning all the other stuff we're talking about.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And how many cancers do we catch with our prevention of imaging?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's almost like, you know, what if this was the standard of care first?
Right. But it's not even the standard of care last. It's not even standard of care at all.
Right.
I mean, it's totally ignored by modern medicine. Once again, I ask you, listeners, to think about it. Have you ever had a discussion with your primary care doctor or your OBGYN doctor about this issue? And the answer is almost no. Yeah. Almost always no. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just also a quick question, Dr. Raymond. I think with the supplementation of vitamin D, we're talking about D3. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And depending on the patient, I sometimes do a D3 with vitamin K2 as well. That's another option. But you can discuss that with your provider. Medicinal mushrooms may also help. A study from the journal Nutrition and Cancer showed that greater mushroom intake was related to a significantly lower risk of breast cancers among postmenopausal women.
Next up, green tea. In a study from the University of Southern California School of Medicine, they found that women who drank green tea had significantly less cancer than those who did not. Furthermore, the greater the amount of green tea that was ingested, the higher degree of protection that was observed in the study. And then there was another one that was entitled Green Tea and the Prevention of Breast Cancer, a Case Control Study in Southeast China from a journal called Carcinogenesis that concluded that regular consumption of green tea can protect against breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the next supplement we'll talk about is called DIM, D-I-M, which stands for diindolylmethane, or I3C, which stands for indole-3-carbamol. An article from the Harvard Medical School published in March of 2014 stated that, quote, both DIM and I3C appear to have cancer-preventing properties, end quote. One study demonstrated that supplementation with DIM for 1 year in BRCA carriers, that's basically women who are at increased genetic risk of breast cancer, was associated with a significant decrease in the amount of fibroglandular tissue on the MRI. And we've also shown that fibroglandular tissue is associated with increased risk of breast cancer.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. According to the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, preclinical studies suggested that melatonin has antioxidant and anti-proliferative properties, including against breast cancer cells. Mm-hmm. And then another from the Aging Clinical and Experimental Research stated that melatonin can also modulate estrogen-dependent pathways and reduce free radical formation, thus preventing mutation and cellular toxicity. So since melatonin works through a myriad of cell-protecting signaling cascades, this hormone can be suitable for clinical cancer prevention and or treatment. Mm-hmm. And that's a quote from that article.
Yeah. Another article on melatonin entitled Melatonin, a Molecule for Reducing Breast Cancer Risk, published in the journal Molecules, stated that experimental studies provide results which support the value of melatonin as an oncostatic drug for reducing the risk of ER-positive, that's estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer.
Hmm. And, you know, of course, we think about melatonin and sleep, mm-hmm. you know, which we've already touched on earlier here. So I think that's one of the big connections of why, the underlying reason why that could be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also a powerful antioxidant just on its own. Mm. And it's because oxidative stress is one of the underlying factors there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yes. Next up is folate. So Dr. Zhang at Harvard School of Public Health, from an analysis of 88,000 women enrolled in the Nurses' Health Study, found that the supplementation with 600 micrograms of folate per day reduced the incidence of breast cancer by 45% in women.
What percent, Lindsay?
45%.
Oh, my gosh. Whoa,
and this is for in a group of women that were drinking one or more alcoholic drinks per day. So, and, you know, we had talked about alcohol and soda being, you know, factors that could increase that risk. So, you know, if we're in that boat where we are drinking some alcohol, here's our solution.
There we go. So listen up out there. If you're drinking alcohol, you need to take your folate, mm-hmm. right? So speaking of vitamins, a study from Tufts University found that the risk of breast cancer increases with lower levels of vitamin B12.
Excellent. And one of our favorite herbs out there is curcumin, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is certainly, Lindsay. I love curcumin. I take it every day. An article from the journal Food Science and Human Wellness entitled Anti-Cancer Effects of Curcumin on Breast Cancer and Stem Cells stated that numerous studies have shown that curcumin, a natural compound, exerts anti-cancer effects by inhibiting cancer cell proliferation and metastasis and by inducing cell cycle arrest and apoptosis. Let me just tell the folks just a little bit about what apoptosis is. Basically, it's just when the cancer cells self-destruct, almost like they commit suicide or they explode or whatever. So basically, curcumin tends to encourage cancer cell death is what happens. And then, Lindsay, I see, I remember back in the old days, you used to bring pomegranate to work, and you're sitting there eating a whole pomegranate at the office. In a study published in the Cancer Prevention Research, the researchers found that pomegranate significantly inhibited breast cancer cell growth. Isn't that interesting?
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things is a lot of times things that we find in nature mimic, the way things look in our bodies, mm-hmm. you know, and a pomegranate, I mean, it's a very sensual fruit.
Yeah,
and like
it
you
is.
Think about all those little clusters and how they could almost look like those little lymph mm-hmm. glands. Mm-hmm. But it's such a beautiful fruit. So wonderful.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it?
We mentioned in the last podcast on PCOS that flaxseed is a miracle food. So an article from the Frontiers in Nutrition entitled The Effect of Flaxseed in Breast Cancer, a literature review, stated that clinical trials showed that flaxseed can have an important role in decreasing breast cancer risk, mainly in postmenopausal women.
Mm-hmm. And then there are the omega-3 fatty acids. We've kind of alluded to them before.
Right.
But I'll get more specific. An article entitled Omega-3 Fatty Acids and Breast Cancer Prevention and Survivorship from the journal Breast Cancer Research stated that each 1/10 increment of the dietary 3-6 ratio was associated with a 6% reduction in breast cancer risk. Let me just kind of elucidate on that. 3-6 ratio means that sort of your ratio of good fats to bad fats. So if you can improve that ratio of good fats to bad fats, then that, once again, can significantly reduce your breast cancer risk. Memorial Sloan Kettering Center, one of the major cancer centers in the country, concludes that fish oil supplementation may lower the risk of breast cancer. An article entitled Specialty Supplements and Breast Cancer Risk in the Vitamins and Lifestyle Cohort from the journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention concludes that, quote, current use of fish oil was associated with a reduced risk of breast cancer with a hazard ratio of 0.68, which means that it was a 32% reduction as compared to the control group. The 10-year average was also suggestive of a reduced risk.
Wow, these percentages, Dr. McMahon, we just keep coming back to it.
But
I mean, we're not talking about a 5% or 10%. We're talking about 20s and 30s and 50s.
Right.
And then again, just that additive effect. So next up, iodine. This is a supplement we got to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
An article from the journal Cancer Epidemiology biology, biomarkers and prevention found that, quote, the combination of high serum iodine levels and high selenium levels was associated with a lower risk of breast cancer. And then another article from the Journal of Cancer stated that dietary iodine insufficiency represents a plausible explanation for the increasing incidence of breast cancer in young women.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to put the caveat out there, though. You need to talk with your medical provider before taking iodine. It's usually something that needs to be tested first before supplementation.
Right. Correct. And, you know, bioflavonoids are one of my also favorite supplements along with the curcumin. It has so many benefits. I take it every day for sure. And there are different kinds of bioflavonoids, by the way. You have quercetin, rutin, luteolin, fisetin. All those are wonderful, and each one has sort of different strengths. But an article entitled, quote, Anti-Cancer Potential of Flavonoids, Recent Trends and Future Perspectives, from a journal called 3Biotech, found that flavonoids greatly influence the cascade of immunological events associated with development and progression of cancer. And that also, in some of the dietary flavonoids have been shown to display in vivo anti-tumor activity and repress in vivo angiogenesis. So let me explain that just a little bit. In vivo means in a live person, not in a test tube. So these weren't just bench studies. And angiogenesis is kind of interesting. When cancer forms, it sends out these new blood vessels like tentacles that attach onto the underlying tissue and also kind of feed the cancer with nutrients. And so the cancer can't grow without those blood vessels. So when you have something like bioflavonoids that are repressing angiogenesis, then that's going to repress cancer.
Mm, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard us talk about toxins quite a lot lately on the podcast. And toxins can accumulate in fatty tissue, which, of course, our breasts are highly fatty. So toxins tend to migrate toward and accumulate in breast tissue. So here's an article from Neuroendocrinology Letters, which shows that cancerous breast tissue tends to be more toxin-laden than non-cancerous breast tissue. They state that, quote, we investigated the accumulation of heavy metals in 20 breast cancer biopsies and compared the findings to the levels found in 8 healthy biopsies. The data suggests that pathological accumulation of transition metals in breast tissue may be closely related to malignant growth process. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Isn't it? And of course, we've talked many times about the endocrine disrupting chemicals or EDCs, which are everywhere. I mean, we're just surrounded by them, unfortunately. But they can really present a problem. The esteemed MD Anderson Cancer Center, which is the number one cancer center in the country by most regards, stated that endocrine disruptors have been associated with altering reproductive function in men and women, abnormal growth patterns, neurodevelopment delays, and an increased risk of breast cancer. Isn't that interesting? End quote, breast cancer. Also, a report from the Endocrine Society and International Pollutants Elimination Network identifies more than 140 endocrine-disrupting chemicals. The report states that these EDCs, such as perfluorinated compounds, chemicals commonly found in the water, stain-resistant clothing, food wrappers, lubricants, paints, and cookware, can disrupt immune systems, lower birth weight, alter puberty, and raise breast cancer risk. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So go back and listen to our podcast on toxins. We talk a lot about EDCs, and I think that there again, medicine tends to ignore the issue of toxins, and I think it's because there's no money in it. If there was some sort of great detox drug out there, oh my gosh, we'd be all over it, right? The drug reps would come into the doctor's offices and serve lunch, and the doctors would be prescribing the detox drug. But there is no such drug, so therefore we tend to ignore it.
Mm-hmm. We make more money off of selling products that are related to those chemicals.
Correct.
Another study published in the journal Environmental Research stated that, quote, exposure to certain chemicals in the environment, especially early in life, is linked to a higher risk of breast cancer. And this is where it gets super convicting to us ladies and moms out there. In fact, some studies suggest that even in utero exposure to these endocrine-disrupting chemicals can alter epigenetic expression, which then results in an increased risk of breast cancer later on in life for these children. So really, they're born behind the eight ball.
right from the get-go, aren't they, Lindsay? It's just so sad. We've talked about previously in our other podcasts how these in utero exposures to these EDCs, they not only can increase the offspring's risk of breast cancer later in life, but also increase risk of things like PCOS and endometriosis and all kind of badness. And so, ideally, before you get pregnant, you should be squeaky clean and have a good diet even before you get pregnant. And then during pregnancy as well, do your best to avoid some of these toxins. A study published in the Annual Review of Public Health entitled Environmental Determinants of Breast Cancer and performed by the Cancer Center at UCSF, which is another top medical school in the country, that's University of California, San Francisco, suggested that exposure to certain chemicals in early life in the womb during pregnancy increases the risk of developing breast cancer later in life. So it's there are multiple studies that show the same thing. We're not just making this up, y'all. This is the real deal.
Continuing on this vein, PCBs or polychlorinated bisphenols are one of the most common persistent organic pollutants in our environment. A study from the Journal of Environment International showed, quote, a significant increase in the risk of breast cancer in individuals with higher plasma and fat levels of PCBs.
Interesting. And PCBs are everywhere. They've done experiments where they go down to like Antarctica and they do muscle biopsies on penguins and they find PCBs. They're everywhere. We unfortunately have not been kind to Mother Earth, Gaia, and we've saturated the earth with this stuff. All right. Anyway, heavy metal exposure has also been linked to increased risk of breast cancer, Lindsay. Lead and cadmium have estrogenic properties and have been associated with an increased risk of breast cancer in human epidemiologic studies. A journal called the Journal of Toxicology stated that evidence indicates that long-term exposure to some metallic compounds induces different forms of cancer, including breast cancer, end quote. Mm-hmm.
Even air pollution can be part of this picture and contribute to an increased risk of breast cancer. The Journal of Epidemiology concluded that, quote, higher levels of some airborne metals, specifically mercury, cadmium, and lead, were associated with higher levels of postmenopausal breast cancer. Also, in the Journal of Endocrinology, we've got, quote, of the metals analyzed, air emissions of arsenic, cadmium, lead, and mercury were significantly associated with the incidence of breast cancer.
And the first step, of course, is in detoxification is avoidance. Don't toxify yourself with junk food, chemicals, and toxic personal care products like lotions, cosmetics, environmental contaminants, etc. Take a long look at what you're using for cleaning supplies, cooking pots, pesticides, and solvents. Consider a toxin testing if needed with your provider, and then you can get on a customized detox program if needed. And then go back and check out our podcast on toxins. That's podcast number 22.
You know, I think we get so accustomed to all of these products just being household names, and they're just on our shelves and we use them every day, and you know, it doesn't affect us immediately. But here we're talking about these are long-term effects, and there's something hidden here that's going on that we don't see.
Right. Well, the problem is, Lindsay, in medicine, we never try to look back and connect the dots. I mean, somebody comes in and they have a problem, like for instance, breast cancer. We never go back and look at, gee, was it the cosmetic we were putting on our body? Was it the cleaning product we used? Even ask questions about how was your diet? We never do that, right? Right. It's all, let's do this lumpectomy. Let's did we get the whole kind of gears of breast cancer treatment to sort of kick in, but we never go back and look at those risk factors, which I think is unfortunate because I think if we did, then perhaps we could prevent future breast cancer in that same woman, right?
Right.
Right. We have to ask, why did she get the problem? I mean, that's what functional medicine is all about, is the why question. Why do they have the problem? And if you can solve that, then hopefully we can, if we fortunately get over her breast cancer, we can prevent a recurrence down the road, right?
Yes. So. And that's the power and hope of being able to pull in integrative and functional medicine. I think that's a wonderful point, Dr. Raymond. So stress can also be a factor in the development of breast cancer. And, you know, even just you going through that storyline of, you know, future occurrences of cancer, you know, let's reduce that stress level for women by giving them some actionable items.
Right.
So, and one of those is reducing your stress. So MD Anderson Cancer Center put out, here's a quote: long-term stress can weaken your immune system, leaving you prone to diseases like cancer. So the key is to deal with stress before it deals with you.
Right, there we go.
And be proactive. And a lot of what can reduce stress is empowerment and knowledge and action. Mm-hmm. So taking action steps in your life. So work with your healthcare provider, your counselor, your health coach, and develop a customized stress management program.
Mm-hmm. You know, rightfully so, Lindsay. Women are really stressed about this breast cancer issue. It is a big, big, big deal. If you look at the numbers, one in eight women will get it in her lifetime. I remember there's a really interesting experiment one time where they took a bunch of mice and they exposed them to some toxic effect, and it was a stressor. They had two groups of mice. One had this button that the mice could mash. The button didn't do any good. It didn't do anything. But just because they had these mice felt like there's something I can do about that. Right?
Yeah.
It reduced their stress as measured by, you know, cortisol levels, something like that. So I think that even though women have so much stress about this, these are things they can do. And they're not just imaginary things like that button. Mm-hmm. These are very real things.
Yes.
So I think that, once again, that concept of empowerment hopefully will reduce some of the stress that women have by knowing that they're doing all they can do in a very real way that will reduce bad outcomes. So anyway, let's move on to weight. According to the journal Obesity Reviews, central but not general obesity may be specifically associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. Also, an article in the journal Obesity and Lipotoxicity, they state that several studies show a significant stronger association is obvious between increased body mass index and higher breast cancer incidence. Furthermore, obese women are at higher risk of all-cause and breast cancer-specific mortality when compared to non-obese women with breast cancer. Hmm. And, of course, we see this obesity pattern affecting so many things, whether it be heart disease or dementia or badness of many kinds. So, yeah, I think that we should all be doing our best to maintain ideal body weight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of those interesting links, too, that's part of that picture is just that fat is like a safe place where our bodies can store toxins. I know you talked about, you know, in those patients where they have the stubborn weight loss issues, what might be actually an undergoing root cause of that is just detoxification issues.
Correct.
So alcohol may be another problem for women. One glass of wine per night probably won't hurt you. However, more than one alcoholic beverage per day appears to increase a woman's risk of breast cancer. According to breastcancer.org, compared to women who don't drink at all, women who have three alcoholic drinks per week have a 15% higher risk of breast cancer. Furthermore,
that's per week.
That's per week. That's one, per two, week. Three drinks
per
day. Week.
Yep.
Not per day. Mm-hmm. Experts estimate that the risk of breast cancer goes up 10% for each additional drink women regularly have each day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And women who do drink alcohol should definitely supplement with folate.
Right.
Data from the Nurses' Health Study, which is a huge study, reveals that for women who drink one or more drinks of alcohol per day, there is a 45% reduction in breast cancer risk if they also take 600 micrograms of folate per day. Isn't that amazing?
45% reduction.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah,
it's great. Yeah. And next up, huge advocates here for breastfeeding your children. It's great for them, but it's also really powerful medicine for breast health. So a study quoted by MD Anderson from the Collaborative Group on Hormonal Factors in Breast Cancer, the researchers found that for every 12 months a woman breastfed, her risk of breast cancer was reduced by 4.3%. And you'll, of course, also, women, we want to avoid any unnecessary radiation, as that can contribute to increased cancer rates.
Yeah, the issue of hormones now in breast cancer, this is very complicated, Lindsay, and it's confusing and it's controversial. The largest prospective study ever done on hormones was called the Women's Health Initiative Study. I remember I was a much younger doctor when that came out, and the study unequivocally showed that women had an increased risk of breast cancer for those women who took Premarin and Provera. And those were the common drugs we used back then for HRT, hormone replacement therapy. But listen up now. I want to make a very important point. Provera is a progestin, which is not the same as progesterone. Okay, they are different chemical structures, and they have very different side effect profiles. A study in 2015, analysis from the WHI with about 13 years of follow-up, found that women who took estrogen alone were about 20% less likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer as compared to women not taking hormone replacement therapy. Here's a quote from the WHI study, quote, "Menopausal hormone replacement therapy with estrogen alone yielded lasting reductions in breast cancer incidence and death, while estrogen plus a progestin showed persistent increases in both. Long-term data from two Women's Health Initiative trials indicated that the above was true." The bottom line is that contrary to popular belief, the estrogen did not cause breast cancer. It appeared to be the artificial, non-bioidentical progestin that was the culprit.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And there was another study by the Women's Health in the Lund area study in Sweden also revealed that women who received estrogen alone did not have an increased risk of breast cancer, while those receiving Premarin and Provera did. Another study of 23,000 women actually confirmed a 28% decrease in death from breast cancer in women who took estriol or estradiol. So it's not estrogen really that's the culprit, right, is what we're saying here. That's the bottom line.
And another randomized study with over 16 years of cumulative follow-up data that women with prior hysterectomy who took estrogen alone HRT had a 20% reduction in breast cancer diagnosis compared to those assigned to a placebo group. Now, again, these are women who had a hysterectomy. However, women who have not had a hysterectomy should not be taking estrogen alone. They should be complementing this with a good progesterone. So a large study called the EPIC study looked at this issue. It's published in the International Journal of Cancer, and it showed, again, that the estrogen and progestin group, like Provera, had a significant increase in risk of breast cancer. However, the estrogen and the bioidentical progesterone group had a 10% less breast cancer than the placebo group.
It's really unfortunate and a great disservice to women that all the hormones have just been lumped together as cancer-causing. When all that WHI data hit the fan from that original study, then all the hormones got this bad rap. And everyone, even many doctors, just concluded that all hormones are bad and cause cancer and we shouldn't use them at all. And we unnecessarily yanked them away and women are suffering and we're missing out on some of the benefits of hormones.
That's right. Yeah. I was working in a primary care setting back when that came out and we took all the women off the hormones and oh my gosh, we got so many calls. The women were miserable. And it was just so unfortunate because there were other alternatives that we were never quite frankly taught about, you know. It's really too bad it came down like that, Lindsay. I think the main issue is it matters what you give and how you give it. Mm-hmm. And if you give the right stuff in the right way, the evidence is quite strong that for the vast majority of women, the HRT does not cause breast cancer.
It's also important to realize that other benefits of hormones that we could be denying women mm-hmm. by not giving them hormones. By far, the number one killer for women is heart disease. It's not mm-hmm. breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a podcast on breast cancer, and so we're acknowledging that's an important issue, but it's not the number one killer. Heart disease is.
It is, by far.
And HRT is protective of heart disease, but many women aren't getting that benefit because of false concerns about HRT.
Yeah, there's really a myth out there that it's really unfortunate, and so what we're trying to do today is explode that myth. It's really interesting. If you look at the disease, it's really the serious disease most common in women is osteoporosis, right? It's huge. So many women have this. Way more common than breast cancer. And for many women, it's life-altering or fatal mm-hmm. when they break that hip.
Right.
The HRT is very beneficial for this. But we're denying women of this benefit due to the misguided myths about the hormones of breast cancer.
And, I mean, there's other benefits, too. You know, we think about better skin quality, better mental acuity, the brain loves estrogen. Mm-hmm. I always heard you say that. Mm-hmm. Less vaginal dryness and atrophy, which of course we can then connect with UTI problems down mm-hmm. the road. Mm-hmm. Less pain with intercourse, better libido, less colon cancer, less incontinence, less hot flashes and night sweats, better sleep, and better overall quality of life. In fact, a study quoted in the journal Obstetrics and Gynecology stated that women even tend to live longer with HRT. Mm-hmm. So if we deny women HRT due to false concerns about breast cancer, then mm-hmm. we're taking away mm-hmm. all of these potential benefits. Yeah.
And I tell you, Lindsay, if you can live longer and live better, that's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Right. So, I think most people mm-hmm. would yeah. elect for that.
I think so. Longer and better. Yes, yeah. correct. So anyway, well, keep in mind that all estrogens are not the same either. There are three major types of estrogens, the estrone, which we call E1, estradiol, which we call E2, and the estriol, which we call E3. Estrone and estradiol are both very strong estrogens, and for women who have estrogen receptor cancers, these can be the culprits, especially the estrone. However, estriol is a relatively weak estrogen and actually seems to be breast cancer protective. A study performed by the California Kaiser Foundation Health Plan showed that the women who had the highest blood levels of estriol had a 58% less risk of breast cancer compared to the lowest estriol group.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
It's also important how the estrogens are metabolized. So not just that we have different estrogens, but how those estrogens are metabolized in the body. They can go down different pathways. So a study called The Hormones and Diet in Etiology of Breast Cancers revealed that women who metabolized down the 2-hydroxyestrone versus the 16-hydroxyestrone pathway had a 42% reduction in the occurrence of breast cancer compared to those with lower ratios of the 2 to 16. So some of the therapies discussed in this article, such as dietary suggestions, DIM, or indole-3-carbinol, help to push estrogen mm-hmm. down that healthy 2-hydroxy pathway. So mm-hmm. we want that 2-hydroxy pathway.
Correct. Yeah, I think we should almost put DIM or I3C in the water supply, Amy. Lindsay, I think it's just so important.
Yeah.
One of the problems with supplementation is Uncle doctor, I can only take so many pills. So you have to sort of establish a priority, what's most important. But I think if you're willing to, certainly the DIM or I3C really has no downside effects. And I think it can definitely help out here by pushing it down the correct metabolic pathway and ultimately reducing risk of breast cancer.
Remember, all those are going to be in your cruciferous vegetables too. Ramp that up in your diet as
Absolutely. Progesterone also seems to be breast protective for the average woman when it comes to breast cancer. In a study from Johns Hopkins, they followed a large group of women who had difficulty with fertility. These women had low progesterone and went on to develop 5 times more breast cancer than women with normal progesterone. In addition, the study revealed that the low progesterone group had a 10-fold increase in death of all types of cancers compared to women with a normal progesterone level. According to the book Keeping Abreast by oncologist Khalid Mahmoud, MD, if your progesterone level is consistently low, you are at future risk of breast cancer, end quote. Let me clarify this again. It's really important, Lindsay. Bioidentical progesterone is breast cancer protective. We saw this with the EPIC study, as already quoted. However, progestins, also known as progestogens, like Provera, and like the stuff you often find in most birth control pills, are not the same, and they are associated with an increased risk of breast cancer.
This is worth repeating. When it comes to the hormone issue, it matters which hormones or combination of hormones that you use and how you use it. For the average woman, the data shows that a properly administered hormone regimen does not increase the risk of breast cancer and may even be breast protective and also has many other benefits.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of hormones, Coach, let's also just comment on the birth control pills because those are types of hormones.
Right.
An analysis of the data from more than 150,000 women who participated in 54 epidemiologic studies showed that overall, women who had ever used oral contraceptive had a slight 7% increased relative risk of breast cancer compared with women who had never used oral contraceptives. Women who are currently using oral contraceptives had about 24% increased risk of breast cancer. The risk declined after the use of oral contraceptives stopped, and no increased risk was evident by about 10 years after the woman had stopped.
And this data was further confirmed in a 2010 analysis of of the Nurses' Health Study, which has been following more than 116,000 female nurses who were 24 to 43 years old, and when they enrolled in the study in 1989. And they found that these participants who used oral contraceptives had a slight increase in breast cancer risk.
Another study in 2017, a large prospective Danish study, looked at breast cancer risk associated with the more recent formulations of oral contraceptives. They concluded that, quote, overall, women who were using or had recently stopped oral combined hormone contraceptives had a modest, they said modest, but it was 20%, Amy. I don't consider that modest.
No.
I think that's huge. Increased risk of breast cancer compared with women who had never used oral contraceptives. The risk of breast cancer also increased the longer the oral contraceptives were used. I don't consider 20% to be modest.
No, I don't either. I think that's significant.
Especially when it comes to, I mean, if it's 20%, increased risk of some benign thing, but 20% increased risk of breast cancer. That's awful.
Yeah. Another study published in the Journal of American Medical Association found that women with a strong family history of breast cancer may have up to 11 times higher risk of breast cancer if they had ever taken the pill. But experts caution that the study involved mainly women who took birth control pills prior to the 1975, when there contained much higher levels of estrogen and progestin than in today's lower dose pills.
Mm-hmm. Now let's take a look at things like sugar and or glucose and insulin management. From the journal Diabetes Management, a total of about 116,000 females were nurses who were about 30 to 55 years old and free of cancer in 1976, were followed through 1996 for the occurrence of type 2 diabetes and through 1999 for invasive breast cancer. During 2.3 million person years of follow-up, which is huge, women with type 2 diabetes had about a 17% elevated incidence of breast cancer compared with women without diabetes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see so many women, they come in and their sugars are going up, the A1Cs, their blood sugar average, their insulin's going up. And this is not just diabetes. That has implications for breast cancer, heart disease, dementia, so many other things. Mm. It's all connected. Another study from the journal Cancer states that higher levels of insulin resistance in postmenopausal women are associated with higher breast cancer incidence and higher all-cause mortality after breast cancer.
So now you know, on the Functional Medicine Podcast, we could never do a podcast without mm-hmm. talking at least a little bit about that microbiome.
For sure.
So here's an article in the prestigious journal Science that stated that scientists have discovered distinct populations of microbes living inside different types of tumors. In other words, breast and brain and pancreatic tumors have their own characteristic microbiomes.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Lindsay. The journal Science is probably one of the top journals in the world. And here we have this article in there that shows that these microbes are living right inside the tumors. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Another study from the journal Frontiers in Oncology stated that the microbiota plays a crucial role in preserving the health status of human body, and their impairment causes pathobiological changes, including breast cancer. They go on to say that the evidence of the correlation of microbiome with breast cancer is undeniable. Wow, Coach, this microbiome stuff is really getting spooky. It just seems like it's everywhere. And for those who are paying attention to it, I think it's one of the hottest topics in medicine these days. And, of course, as you know from our podcast, we pay attention to it all the time. It's just such a huge deal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Y'all, we got to get busy. We got to get gut busy here, optimizing your microbiome by eating a healthy diet with a wide variety of fiber, avoiding sugar, and avoiding processed foods. Consider eating those good cultured and fermented foods like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, kombucha, and consider taking probiotics and prebiotics. And also avoid antibiotics unless absolutely necessary, especially those broad-spectrum ones like Cipro. Those are like a big bomb going off in your microbiome.
My gosh. You know, it's amazing, Lindsay. We doctors hand out antibiotics like they're candy. And sometimes people come with the smallest things and we give them Cipro. Oh, my gosh. There's actually a black box warning on Cipro right now that we shouldn't use it unless absolutely necessary. And yet it just seems like we prescribe it way too much. And even folks like the CDC will tell you there's a vast overprescription of antibiotics, and yet doctors and patients have bought into that we need a pill for every ill, every little sniffle we get, we need an antibiotic, and it's just crazy. Mm. And I think ultimately it's turning into some real badness vis-a-vis bacterial resistance and all kind of other problems. But an interesting article from the University of Chicago explains a possible mechanism of how the microbiome affects breast cancer via estrogen metabolism. They state that the intestinal microflora plays a key role in the enterohepatic circulation of estrogens by deconjugating bound estrogens that appear in the bile, thereby permitting the free hormones to be reabsorbed. And then those hormones, of course, build up, and that increases the risk of breast cancer.
These little microbes are amazing little busy bees. Another evidence-based strategy to reduce breast cancer would be to spend more time outside in the sun. And who's going to object to that? Although dermatologists in the crowd would probably argue with us a little bit on this issue, but a study conducted by Wake Forest School of Medicine and published in the American Journal of Epidemiology stated that women with high sun exposure have half the risk of developing advanced breast cancer.
Now, there we go. Oh my gosh. These are huge numbers. Yeah. Now, we're not suggesting you do this. I got to preface this statement, but it's kind of just interesting. A study published in the journal Breast Cancer Research found that women who took a low-dose aspirin at least three times a week had a lower risk of HR-positive and HER2-negative breast cancer compared with those that did not take the drug regularly. In the aspirin group, there was a 39% reduced risk of breast cancer. Regular use of COX-2 inhibitors, also another sort of anti-inflammatory drug, was associated with a 61% reduced risk of breast cancer. However, be cautious. These drugs have potential side effects with long-term use, such as things like gastrointestinal bleeds and cerebral bleeds. So there again, you definitely want to consult your doctor on this. This is not for everybody.
And just think about that underlying principle, though. Yeah. They're decreasing inflammation.
Yeah. I think a lot of big shot universities have concluded that inflammation is the root cause of most diseases, right. And so we see a direct link there. These anti-inflammatory drugs, huge reduction in risk of breast cancer. Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, we got to throw in here too to consider a program of self breast massage and even nipple stimulation. So, according to a study by Professor Timothy Murrell of the Department of Community Medicine at the University of Adelaide in Australia, frequent nipple stimulation produced a significant reduction in the incidence of subsequent breast cancer. So, and that's just a really easy thing to do, even, you know, getting your partners involved.
You know,
breast massage, I think probably why that can be really helpful is the breasts are so highly lymphatic and we're getting that lymph flow moving.
Correct.
We're not having that waste system of the lymph just sitting there. We want that moving and getting out of the body and detoxifying.
Right. And let's face it, Lindsay, most cancers are what we call ductal carcinomas, right? These ducts, and if you can sort of massage that area, then you break up the loculations and get the fluid flowing. And also you're releasing oxytocin, which is a powerful antioxidant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so many benefits of that. This kind of an interesting study that Dr. Murrell did many years ago.
And, you know, Dr. Murrell also got to throw out there just that whole underwire issue, too, bras, I think just wherever we can, trying to allow good free lymph movement exercise is part of that. Good sweating is part of that. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, trying to, you know, where you can get that bra off or find a different way of supporting your breasts that aren't so constrictive.
Yeah, Lizzie, there were a couple things that came to mind that I considered putting in this podcast, but I didn't really go there because I just couldn't find any scientific evidence, but I will mention them. As you can see so far in this podcast, I've done everything I can to support what we're suggesting with good, solid scientific evidence.
Right.
But for instance, the underwire bra issue did come up. There was one study many years ago that suggested that wearing underwire bra constricted lymph flow and increased risk of breast cancer. Subsequently, I think other experts, studies have suggested that that's not the case. Okay. And so I don't know. The science, I think, is equivocal on that. The other issue that came up, and there again, I didn't really focus on the podcast, was the issue of dry brushing. You know, we have kind of implemented that sometimes in our clinic, secondary to just this whole detox process, getting lymphatics moving and stuff like that. It kind of makes sense to me. But there again, I couldn't find any literature on that. But I think it's important to state that I think the literature is biased. If you look at the New England Journal of Medicine, you'll never find a major article about spinach, will you? Right? Even though or broccoli, although we know it's great for you, we'll find articles about drugs and surgery and devices and sure. all kind of stuff like that, things that make money. I think I've mentioned before that editors from The Lancet and New England Journal have admitted that these journals have become laundering agencies for drug companies. And so I think that, you know, you'll never see there's no money in doing a study on dry brushing.
Right.
Nobody's going to pay for it. Right. And there's no upside to spending your time as a researcher doing that or breast massage. There's no money in that. Right. So I do think that there is an inherent bias in science and things that may be helpful for women are just not looked into. But there again, I didn't really emphasize those things because I'm trying to be very evidence based.
Right.
On this program.
Absolutely.
But I will just mention those. OK.
Yes. So, excellent.
And finally, sexual activity may play a role. A study from the journal called Clinical Epidemiology showed that in age-matched women who had not had a baby, breast cancer incidence was lower in the sexually active group than in the celibate group.
Your risk of breast cancer also depends. Excellent study there. Your risk of breast cancer also depends even on where you live. Mm-hmm. So. You can, by living near green spaces, that could reduce your risk. So a study published in the International Journal of Hygiene and Environmental Health examined the relationship between the exposure to green spaces and breast cancer. The study, which analyzed data from more than 3,600 women in Spain, concluded that the risk of breast cancer was lower in women who lived closer to urban green spaces like parks or gardens. So, a lovely reason.
Isn't that nice? You live in a very green space, don't you?
I do. I'm blessed to live in a green space. Yeah,
Lindsay
yes.
lives way out in the country in a beautiful house out there. So, anyway, surrounded by chickens and
meadow and bugs and wildlife.
And water moccasins, right?
Yes, they are there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we live in the south, so we definitely yes. have critters like that. But anyway, other strategies, don't smoke, which is associated with higher risk of breast cancer, according to breastcancer.org. And regular screening, early diagnosis can contribute to improved outcomes. Although, I'll just make a side note on that. I think there's some controversy about screening. I know the USPS Task Force years ago came out with a statement, we only need to do mammograms every other year, but other organizations who have a financial interest in it said, no, we need to do it every year. Although I think the data didn't really support it. Another issue is I think that some, I won't name names, but some really smart experts have said we should be doing screening more selectively on those, we should be doing more genetic testing and look at risk profile and be doing more regular screening on those who are at higher risk and not necessarily doing routine screening mammograms on those who are low risk. Because I think that we forget that there are downsides to screening as well. We have so many women, the fear that's created, mm-hmm. so many needless biopsies, needless lumpectomies, mm-hmm. needless mastectomies or whatever, all these false positives in this kind of wake of destruction that is created by maybe overly aggressive screening. I don't know. Once again, I'm just saying that there is a legitimate controversy there. I'm not trying to weigh in on either side, but it reminds me of the PSA prostate controversy. There are folks, I think, who would suggest that when you look at the herd, we're doing more harm than good, right? Mm-hmm. Certainly, some individual guy may say, okay, that prostatectomy saved my life. But for every one of those, you have scores of guys who've had needless biopsies, needless prostatectomies, needless this, that, and the other. And so at what cost? Where do you draw the line? I think that, once again, there's legitimate arguments on both sides. I'll just
yes.
say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent point. Mm-hmm. So So along with all of these above evidence-based recommendations that we've been trying to give you, we have tried to give you some practical strategies as well to help reduce your risk of breast cancer.
So we want you to become the empowered patient, not the helpless victim in this fight against breast cancer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, patient empowerment is so wonderful. And I think that that's I all the time when I'm seeing patients, I recommend books for them to read and just to take ownership for your body. Be the captain of your ship. Because nobody cares about you like you. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you go to your I have a doctor friend who's an OBGYN doctor. And of course, they're the ones who are kind of the specialists in this area. And she sees 50 patients a day, 50. Right. She does not have time, even if she wanted to, does not have time to talk about preventive health. Right.
Right.
It's all about going in, doing that pap smear and getting out.
Those are requirements put on a lot of doctors by the way that our medical system is designed.
It's the system. Mm-hmm. All these doctors are hardworking, smart people who go to work every day to
who
help
care.
People. But who care? Yeah. Who care? But who do? And who would love to have time.
Yes.
Given their druthers, they would love to have time to talk about this kind of stuff. But guess what? They've never been educated on it. They don't know about it, and they don't have time to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So take it upon yourself to learn about this kind of stuff. And if you don't believe us, look it up. Right?
Yep. It's your body. It's your life.
It's straight from literature, mm-hmm. and you kind of decide where you want to come down on this. But we certainly encourage that you become the empowered patient. You practice prevention, and don't be just a helpless victim in this fight against breast cancer.
Yes, and you'll be encouraged the more you delve into it.
Yeah, for sure.
like what we've been trying to hone in on today. Yeah. There's just so much that can be done to reduce your
risk.
That's right. So I guess that'll about do it for this episode of our Functional Medicine Podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today on this very important topic. Now that we are approaching October, you guys can share this podcast out with your friends because October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So now share that out. We hope that some of what we've given you today would be helpful and helpful to other family or friends.
And don't forget to check us out at functionalmedicinepodcast.com or McMinnClinic.com. Also, help the podcast grow by telling your friends and family about us. And again, please leave a review and a comment for us on iTunes, and we really appreciate it.
Yes, and as always, thank you, Ben Wedland, our recording engineer. Ben, we appreciate you.
And so, Coach, as always, leave us with a Coach Lindsay pearl of wisdom today.
Oh, thank you, Dr. McMinn. You know, I just think we go back to the big picture. Mm-hmm. Our breasts are highly fatty. They're highly lymphatic. We got to detox. Mm-hmm. We got to live that clean lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So we got to avoid those toxins and promote good, healthy, anti-inflammatory lifestyle. So mm-hmm. that's true prevention. So folks, there's probably maybe at least one thing in this podcast you heard today, one research study. So mm-hmm. take an action step, write that down, move forward with it.
That's right. And take your vitamin D, right?
Yes, take your vitamin D, please. Okay. Get your level tested.
Okay, that's right. Well, that should wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening. This is Dr. McMinn.
And this is Coach Lindsay.
Take care and be well.